We're on Mem Vav Amid Aleph, and your book is 46A7. Mem Vav Amid Aleph, 46A3. In the regular Gemaras, it's Mem Vav Amid Aleph. What am I looking for? Meira Bonon Umay. Yeah. Okay. It's 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 6, 18 lines at the bottom of the page. Okay. Mem Vav Amid Aleph, 18 lines in the end of the page. The Gemara before brought down an argument between the Chachomim and Rabbi Elazar. It's very easy Gemara, by the way, today. Between the Chachomim and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. If the din of Meitzi Shemra, that the guy pays the knas, is that only if he had relations with the wife, and then he says she's not a psula, or even if he didn't. Okay? So, right, that's what the Gemara quoted before. That according to one opinion, it's only if he had relations with her, and then he says she's not a psula, then he pays the fine. Okay? And the Gemara is going to explain this now very simply. Where do we find the case of Rabbanan and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov? Like, where do we find this argument? So it says, the Tanya in the Brayse, it says like this. Keter Hitzah Shemra. What's the case that the Torah speaks about Meitzi Shemra? So the Gemara says like this. Bola Bezdin, the husband comes to Bezdin, Ba'amad, Pleni Le'matzasi Le'bitcha Psulim. He says, speaks to the father of the girl. Right, that's what it says. It comes to the father of the girl. He says, Pleni, Mr. So-and-so, I don't find that your daughter is a virgin. Right? And he says she committed adultery between the kedushin and the wedding. Right? That's what the husband says. So it says, Im yesh edim shezin satachtov, if the witnesses that she committed adultery, yesh lo ksuba mana. She only gets a ksuba of $100. So right away the Gemara interrupts. Says, she doesn't get a ksuba. Baskila, she's getting killed. The Gemara says, if there's witnesses that she committed adultery, she only gets a ksuba of 100. So right away, the Gemara interjects, what do you mean ksuba? She gets killed. Skila, she committed adultery. She doesn't get any ksuba, she gets killed. The Gemara says, nahachi kama. What it means is like this. Im yesh edim shezinsa tachtov, if there's witnesses, that the Gemara is adding to the text of the Braisa. But the Braisa is saying like this. If there are witnesses that she committed adultery, beskila, then she gets stoned. What happens, zinsa mikara, if she committed adultery before she was engaged, before the kedushin, okay, then yesh lo ksuba mana. Because we know, a psula gets a ksuba of 200, virgin gets 200, non-virgin gets 100, right? So now the guy comes to Bezdin. This is what the Gemara says, a very simple case. Guy comes to Bezdin, says to the father of the girl, you know, your daughter's not a psula. She's not a virgin. So the din is like this. If there are edim, she committed adultery after the kedushin, she gets stoned. If there are edim, she was with somebody, it's not adultery then, because she wasn't married. If she was together with somebody before she gets married, before the kedushin, then she's not a psula. She's only a bu'ula, so then the ksuba is only $100, not 200. So the Gemara says, nimsa shemra, what happens, taka, that ain't a shemra? What happens if she's taka innocent? It's not true. For instance, he brings witnesses, but they became disqualified. Edom zomimin, right? So they were disqualified. So what's the din? Pulaika v'naisa me'asela. Okay, so if it's true, she gets skila. Right? If she was with somebody before she got kedushin, okay, she only gets a ksuba of 100. What happens if it's a lie, what the guy said? He's taka meitzi shemra. So then the din is, who like her? He gets malchus, right? V'neise mea sela. And he plays the fine of 100 sela. Like we learned in the psukim.
The edim or the husband?
What?
Maybe the Edim lie, the husband was like a naive, the Edim came and said, you know what?
But the fact that he accused her falsely, we're going to see all the details. If the witnesses came, he asked them, not asked them. We'll see all the Gemara's going to go, this is a very simple Gemara, this Gemara's just discussing the case in all possibilities. Now, so, and then the Chachamim hold, Bein Baal, Bein Shalei Baal. Whether the husband lived with her or didn't live with her, right? Whether he suspects her before he actually lived with her the night of the wedding or not, is still the fine of $100 and he gets Malkus. Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov emir loyna medvarim alolu, the whole Malkus and paying a fine is only b'shabal, only if he actually lived with his wife. He had intimacy with his wife. If not, there's no fine and there's no Malkus.
How would you know she's not virgin?
Huh? One second. We're going to see in the Gemara. It's a good point. How he's going to bring witnesses? Okay? But according to Rabbi Lozer ben Yaakov, the only time the husband who accuses falsely his wife, yeah, gets Malkus and pays 100 shekel, 100 tzela, is only if he actually lived with her. And he's going to explain why in the Gemara. Why does he say what he says? The Chachamim hold, whether he was with her, wasn't with her, if the husband accuses the wife and he's lying, he gets Malkus and 100 shekel. Okay?
That's also Gezerat Abosu, or there is a logic
to we'll soon see in a minute. Bishleim and Rabbi Lozer ben Yaakov, I understand. Now the Gemara is going to analyze why Rabbi Lozer ben Yaakov says what he says, why the Chacham say what they say. He said, Bishleim and Rabbi Lozer ben Yaakov, I understand why Rabbi Lozer ben Yaakov says what he says. Why? Because it says in the Torah, Uba Eleha, what does the Torah say? The guy married the wife, Uba Eleha, and he lived with her, and then the whole story started. So, like we said, the whole thing is Gzeres HaKasi, right? So the Torah says clearly that he lived with her. So obviously Rabbi Lozer ben Yaakov said the whole din can only apply when the case the Torah says, that he actually lived with her. But the question is, Le'abonon, Mayu Uba Eleha V'Akiv Eleha. But the Torah says he lived with her, right? He came upon her. So the Chumza, even if he didn't, you have to pay the fine. That's not what the Pasuk says. So Gemara says, no, it doesn't mean physically coming on her. Uboileo means he comes to her with alilis, with false accusations. The ekraveileha, and I came near to her, bidvarim with words. In other words, the Belozer ben Yaakov learns the Pasuk, that he came on her physically. That he actually had intimacy with her. Chacham say, no, it doesn't mean he actually boiled that he was, had beer with her. It means he accused her, he attacked her, so to speak. He attacked her with words. But he didn't have to necessarily be with her.
Can't we say Chacham says, Kol Sheken, if he only comes with the Zavarim, it's like this, how much money he has a relation? For sure. Which one is worse?
No, the Chumhog, either way you get.
No, that's what I'm saying. They are not denying that case.
He says, because the Chacham, yeah. What's the logic of the Chacham? The logic of the Chacham could be very simple. Why is the Torah punishing him? Because he lied about her. He made false rumors that she committed adultery and she didn't. That's pretty strong accusations. So what's the difference if he lived with her or not?
No, that's the only problem.
He's punished because he lied. He ruined her reputation for life. Right? What did he say? She committed adultery. Right? Today it's no big deal. But in the old times it was a big deal. She committed adultery. So what's the difference if he had ba'ala or not? So therefore the Chachamim learn, ba'ala, Allah doesn't mean physically had relations with her. It means he attacked her with words. Rabbi Lozer ben Yaakov takes the pasuk simply. He says, listen, maybe logically you're right, but the bottom line is the Torah says, Uba Allah, that he had relations with her. That's the simple meaning of the pasuk. Now, Bishleim el Rabbi Lozer ben Yaakov, now the Gemara says like this, but the pasuk continues. The guy says, I didn't find that your daughter's a psula. Yeah? Now, if he didn't live with her, how would he know? Like, if he didn't live with her, how would he know? Right? So the pasuk says, also in the scene, he says to the father of the girl, Le matzasi libitcha psulim. She's not a virgin. So Gemara said, Bishleim and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, it makes sense. He lived with her, and therefore he didn't find that she's a virgin. El Rabbanan, Maile le matzasi libitcha psulim. What do you mean he didn't find virginity? How would he know if he didn't live with her? So the Gemara says, no. What it means is, Le matzasi libitcha kashri psulim. I didn't find witnesses that she is a virgin. Meaning, I never found witnesses that discarded my witnesses. He brought witnesses that she committed adultery. One thing is clear. A guy just can't come along to a girl and say you're not a virgin and you committed adultery. Nobody would listen to him. So obviously he has witnesses. Correct? And then the girl brings witnesses against him. That's the story of the pasuk. So, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, okay, the Gemara says, when it says I didn't find your daughter to be a virgin, it makes sense. He lived with her, he saw she wasn't a virgin. But according to Chum, what does it mean? So it means, no, I didn't find witnesses that contradicted my witnesses that she's not a virgin. Le matzasi, I didn't find witnesses that contradicted my witnesses to say she's a psula. Now, the Gemara says, Bishleim and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Okay, so the Gemara says, also, now it's also understood according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, that's what it says, Ve'ela besulei biti. He says, these are the signs of virginity of my daughter. What does the father, we'll see a whole story. They take out the sheet that has blood on it, and he says, you see, look, this is simply what the Gemara thinks it means. This is what it is. Right? So that's what Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, the father says, what do you mean she's not a virgin? She is a virgin. El Rabbanon, but according to the Chachamim, that it doesn't matter if he was with her or not, how could the father say, Bsulei Biti? How could the father show this is a sign she was a virgin? He wasn't even with her, maybe, the husband. So it means again, Elu Kashere Bsulei Biti. Not physically bringing cloths, that with blood. These are the witnesses that prove she is a virgin because they disproved the first witnesses. So he says, here's the witnesses that disprove those witnesses and therefore she is a psula. Now, the Mephoshim Sylvia is an interesting concept over here. He brings out only this. Before ancient custom, he brings down from the Ramban in Chumash. Okay? You know, a lot of people take this pasuk literally, that he shows a sheet with blood on it. That's the people. See, he said like this, ancient custom was that before entering the bridal chamber at the time of the chuppah, the groom and the bride would be searched by witnesses that they were, to determine, listen to this, they were not carrying with them anything that could be used for deception. She a bloodstained cloth, which she later claimed it's blood, and he a clean cloth, which showed that she didn't bleed. You know, before they went to the chuppah, they would check, the TSA would check the chosen kala, because she, maybe she's not a virgin, and she wants to prove she is a virgin, she'll bring with her a sheet with blood on it, and then she'll show everybody later, you see, I was a virgin. Or he'll bring a sheet that doesn't have any blood on it to show there was no blood. Okay? After the couple emerged, witnesses would enter the room and take the sheet on which they slept on. According to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, then the verse meant, the girl's parents produced the bloodstained sheet. Okay? And according to the rabbis, so the question is, how can they prove such a sheet? So the Chacham say, no, it doesn't mean to bring the sheet. It means he brings witnesses that disqualified the first set of witnesses.
I remember this custom a long time.
Huh?
I
used to do similar thing in
how?
In Middle East.
They do still do it in the Middle East. Then, but yeah. By Yidden they don't do this.
No.
So it says like this, Bishleim and Rabbi Elazar ben, again, Majuska's going continuing. Bishleim and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, that's what it says, Upar Swah Simla. They spread out the sheet, meaning he was with her and they opened the sheet with the blood, right? El Rabbanan, but according to Rachamim, what does it mean, parsu asimla? What does it mean? They spread out the sheet. There's no sheet. It wasn't with her. Right? According to the Chachamim. So Gemara says, and by the way, this is what Rashi says in Chumash, what the Gemara is saying now. Amir Ababu, it doesn't mean similar, they take a sheet and see if there's blood on it. That's not what it means. It means, they parsu means, Masha Samla. So, Simla is two words. Samla. Okay? Samla means what he placed upon her, the accusation. Meaning, Parsu Asimla, what does it mean? Melamit Shiborim Adam Shalzev, Adam Shalzev. The groom's witnesses come that she did commit adultery. The bride's witnesses come that the first witnesses are false. Adam Zaymimin. And they clarify the matter in Bezdin, Kesimla Chadasha, like a new cloth, meaning like a clean garment. So Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, no, Dvarim Kiksavim, it means literally Simla Mamish, Mamish a cloth. So therefore, if you want to take the pasuk just simply, it makes more sense like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Because otherwise, how do you take spread out the garment? How do you say this is the virginity of my daughter? How do you say that she's not a virgin? Just learning the pasuk, it implies, like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, that the guy did live with the girl. And then he's saying all these accusations. But the Chum say, no, that's not what the Torah means. The Torah is saying, even if he didn't live with her. Obviously, if he lived with her, for sure. But even if he didn't live with her, what do all these things mean? Witnesses this way, witnesses that way, clarifying the issue. But it doesn't actually mean that the guy had to be with his wife to be the din of mitzi shem, not that he's going to get fined and for lying and all that. Okay, now it says like this. Shalach Rabbi Yitzchak ben Rav Yaakov by Giyuri Mishmed Rabbi Yechanan. Rabbi Yitzchak ben Yaakov sent... Rabbi Yitzchak, the son of Rav Yaakov, the son of Gayu, sent in the name of Rabbi Yechon like this. Afagav shalei metzinu b'chol ha-teira kula. Even though we don't find anywhere in the Teira, shachila kakosuv, that the Torah differentiated between b'ya kadarka, l'b'ya shalei kadarka, l'makus l'ancien. In other words, as far as penalties are concerned, okay, because the Torah says like this, there's the normal way of relations, and then there's the back relations, okay? So, normally the Torah says mishkeve isha, which means any type of normal way, but it's called bia kadarka, bia shalei kadarka, the Torah doesn't differentiate. In other words, somebody commits adultery with a woman, not the normal way of relations is, but from the backside, so then the Torah, he's still considered adultery. So he says, even though in the whole Torah we don't find it, but meitzi shemra chilek. The Torah says, meitzi shemra, there is a difference. Ein achayev, this is what Rabbi Yechanan sent this sack, right? Ein achayev at sheyivol shalei kadarka. He's not fined until if he had relations, even no. No, he says like this. Ein chayev at sheyivol shalei kadarka. He's not chayev unless he does it even in an unnatural way. V'yetzi shemra kadarka. But defamer committed adultery in the natural way. Okay, what it means is like this. The Yechon's of the opinion that only if the guy lived with the bride, if the defamer had actual relations with her, okay? But if it was done, if he lived with his wife, the not normal way, right? Then, yeah, if it was performed in an unnatural way, he must have accused the bride of having committed adultery in the natural way. This is what he's saying. No matter how the guy had relations with his wife, natural or unnatural, in order to be chai for meitzi shemra, he had to accuse her that she did it the normal way. That she committed adultery the normal way. Ein chayiv. When does he get the malchus and he says like this? At sheyivo shalei kedarka. Okay, even means even if he did it with his wife in the unnatural way, but the yaitzi shema kedarka. But he defames her that she committed adultery the natural way.
Even that.
Yeah. But otherwise, there's no mitzvah shemra. So the Gemara says, come on, 1 minute. What does this go like? Ikar Rabbanan, because what does Rabbi Yechon say? He had to live with her, right? Whether natural or unnatural, but he had to be with her. And accusing her that she committed adultery the natural way. So Gemara says, come on, Kirabanon, the Chacham say, Afagav the label, even if he didn't have relations, right, he would get the fine. Ikir Ablozer ben Yaakov, if it's according to Ablozer ben Yaakov, Idi vi Idi Kadaka beinin. Because if you're telling it, Ablozer ben Yaakov is learning the Pasuk literally. I don't want to get too descriptive here. Ablozer ben Yaakov learns the Pasuk literally. The only way you can see blood is if it's natural bia, not unnatural bia. Right? It's only from the front can you make her bleed. From the back you can't make her bleed to have, you know, the hymen of the virginity. So he says, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov holds, you have to be Baal. Right? And obviously, there's no difference between first and last. So who is he going to hold like? So he says, no. El shalach Rav Kana Mishmed Rav Yechon, what it means is, Ein Chayva Cheyivo Kedarkei. He says like this. It's wrong. He has to do with his wife the natural way, and he has to be made to shame that she did it Kedarkei. In other words, so basically it goes according to Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, that only if he had relations with her, then there's the din of Meitzi Shemra. Not like the Chachamim. But therefore the Gemara says like this. Rav Kahana says, what did Rabbi Yechonin really say? It means, when the husband lives with her the natural way, and he says she committed adultery the natural way, that's when the din of Meitzi Shemra applies. That means, even though in the whole Torah there's no difference between normal and not normal, natural and not natural, but over here it has to be only the proper way. Because here you're talking about being a psula, and that only depends on being the natural way. So Rabbi Yechon holds, like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, by the way. And, is the Allah like? Okay, whatever, whoever that law is like. Okay, next Mishnah. This is a little bit more what we can hold of. Okay, remember we learned that a kid under bas mitzvah, okay, a girl 12 and a half, a bageres, or bageres, is completely on her own, completely an adult. What she finds is hers, what she does is hers. The father has no jurisdiction over her. Right? Now, Ha'av Zakai, okay, a father, okay, this is when she's a Ketana or a Naira. Naira is from 12 to 12 and a half, right? A girl under 12 is called Ketana. From 12 to 12 and a half, she's a Naira. We're going to learn now from the Psukim that a father has control over his daughter as a Ketana and a Naira until she's 12 and a half. Once she's 12 and a half, right?
For you.
There's a kid. Oh, you're taking your father's thing. Once she hits 12 and a half, she's on her own. Okay? So the Gemara says like this. The Mishnah says, Ba'av Zakei Bebitei, father merits in his daughter. What does he have? B'kudushah. he could do kedushin for her. Bekesef shtar ubebia, whether it's money of kedushin, the father gets the document of kedushin, or he can force her to have relations with the guy he wants to give kedushin to. That the guy's giving kedushin to her. Got it?
Yeah, it's he likes making things difficult, you know. I got it.
Okay, anyway, the father can do kedushin for the daughter, right? It's okay. The father can do kedushin for the daughter. Now, how's kedushin work? It's either kesef, remember at the beginning of kedushin, kesef, shtar, and bia. Kesef is what we do today. The boy gives the girl money, says it mukadeshously, right, in front of two witnesses. What is shtar? We learned in the Gemara kedushin. He writes on a piece of paper, harei mukadeshously b'shtar zoom. Gives her the shtar in front of two witnesses, kedushin. The third one, that the Gemara says we don't do, and if you do it, you get malchus, is bia. Okay, if the guy lives with her, has intimacy with the girl, l'shem kedushin, right? So then, it's also a valid kedushin. So the Mishnah says like this, if the chassan gives the girl the money, the father keeps it. If the boy gives the girl the document, the father keeps it. And the father can tell the girl to be with intimate with this guy to make the kedushin. Now, the father, as biti nasati lisha zetzvei, today would be considered abuse with everything under the sun. But in Torah law, a father can marry off his daughter to whoever he wants, even if she doesn't want.
He used to do that in Iran too.
Yep. Even certain places in the world, they do it today too, by the way. But they marry off kids. Okay, nowadays it's not done, in, at least in the Jewish world. It's not done. But years ago, the father can force the girl to get kedushin. Who kept the money? The father. The shtar kept the money. The father can make her have, force her to have relations with this guy just for the sake of kedushin. Not only that, Zakai b'mitziyusa. He is entitled that what happens, she finds things in the street, the father keeps it. Maisi Odeha, if she works, she has earnings, father keeps it.
Even though she's married now?
We'll see in the Gemara.
That's why they're giving it to her, no?
Huh?
That's why the father gave it to her.
We'll see in the Gemara. Uba Fardis Nidoreha, the father can do have Fardis Nidoremi, can he nullify the vows? Yeah? Uba Mekabel is Gita. The father can even receive the get. This is before the chasana. That's what I'm saying. I told you, wait a minute. The father can give the girl kedushin, right? Force her to do kedushin. Once she's married, even as a kid, she's out of the father. She belongs to the husband. Yeah? But what happens if there's a get between the kedushin and the marriage? Who has jurisdiction over that? The father. That's what it says. Umekabel is gita, and Rashi says it means. It was Rashi. Im nizgashim in her edison. Okay, or like we said, what happens if she became a begetis, or she actually married the guy? Then the father's out of the picture. And the father's out of the picture. Okay? Now, but Einaecho Peres Bechayeho. But the father does not eat the fruits of the field of her property. Okay? Meaning like this. Memvav Amid Beis, we just started a new Mishnah. What happens if a girl inherits property from her mother? That the father doesn't get, she got property from the mother. Okay? Now, what does she do with the fields? So the din is, the father takes control of the fields, but he cannot eat the fruits, that meaning the profits of the field. He has to put it aside in a trust for the girl.
how can the mother give it to her?
How?
If the father is alive, everything the mother has belongs to the
No,
mother.
It's from the mother's family. Not from the mother. From the mother's family. The mother's family. Let's see, her grandfather left her over her money.
Yeah.
So her father, while the girl's alive, doesn't own the field. He takes care of it. It's not his. By the way, if the girl dies, the father gets it all. But while the girl's alive, if the girl had her own trust from the grandparents, right? So then the father can't eat even the fruit. He has to create a trust for the girl, put away the money for her.
Why is it different, Maaseh Yadeha, than this?
Huh? The Gemara is going to discuss the whole thing. What's the difference? Okay? Now, Nisas, once she gets married. So this is all before, even after Kedushin though, but before marriage. So a father can get the Kedushin for his daughter and gets all the benefits of the Kedushin. If she finds things in the street, it belongs to the father. Anything she earns belongs to the father, right? He can accept or get if it's from before she got married. And if she has fields, the father, though, cannot eat the fruits of the field. He has to put it away in a trust, sell it and put it away in a trust fund for her. Okay? What happens, Nisas, once she's married, is like this. Yes, Rala Vabal, in addition to what all the things the father had, right? Now, he has more than the husband, the father. What does he have? Number one, Eichu Peiris Bechayaho. If a girl, a wife, yeah, had her own fields that she brought into the marriage. Okay? So the din is, the husband eats the fruits of the field. The property itself belongs to the woman, but the paters of the field, meaning the profits of the field that the husband gets. Also, chayv b'mezeinei seha, he's obligated to sustain the wife. Upirkeina, to ransom her if she was captured by, kidnappers. Ukfarasa, and he has to bury her. These are the obligations on the husband to the wife.
Why are we mentioning this? Any husband doesn't have this for
you? What?
Regular cases.
Regular cases.
Yeah. No, but the Mishnah is saying the difference between the father and the husband. That's all. It's not a chiddush about this particular girl. Marcy, what's the difference between a father and a husband? Because until the girl's 12 and a half, the father has controls. After 12 and a half, when she's married, the husband controls. What's the difference between the two? So the father gets all the benefits except he doesn't eat the fruits of her field. Okay? The husband, on the other hand, does eat the fruit of the field. But the husband has an additional obligation that the father didn't necessarily have. He has to feed her, ransom her, and bury her.
But Mishnah could say simply, because Mishnah always saves some words, doesn't want to say something extra. He said, from now on, he's like any Ishan Ishan, the husband, as Achrayah.
Yeah, but what is that?
Anything that we know.
What do we know? This is the Mishnah that says what we know.
This is the original. This is that's not the original.
Where does it say the husband has to bury his wife and support her?
This is the place.
Okay. It may be a Mishnah mentioned somewhere else. The Mishnah is also mentioned by the way in Kedushin.
Yeah,
it's brought down. But this is the source of it. This is the Mishnah that says it. Rabbi Yehuda, Emer Rabbi Yehuda says, and the Gemara is going to explain what Rabbi Yehuda is arguing, because the Mishnah doesn't mean anything. Afilu ani shebiyisrael, even the poorest Jew, lo yifres mishnei chalilim u'mekainis, cannot, in the olden days, when there were funerals, they had flutes playing music, and they had people that would cry, and all that stuff. So it says, Rabbi Yehuda holds, even the poorest of the Jews cannot have less for a funeral than two flutes, and a lamenting woman to lead the mourning at the wife's burial. Meaning, even though a rich man, because the Mishnah said, the Gemara explained like this, the Mishnah said, the husband has to bury her. Yeah? So, I mean, again, the Gemara is going to explain what the argument is, but the Kamina, okay, I'll dump her in the ground. So the reason says no. Burial means flutes, two flutes, and
lamenting woman.
That was the for the burial.
Muslim loved it. Nowadays they do the lamenting.
No.
And the Baha'i, you know the Baha'i, they do with the, what do you call this?
Drums.
How do you know?
No, in the olden times, it was mekainenis, and it was a lot of things the Mishnah made, cut and discuss all the things, what you're allowed to do cholameid, you're not to do cholameid, but mekainenis, metapchis, they have a whole procession by a funeral with flutes. It was all covered a mess, by the way.
I remember my grandmother died like 55 years ago. They were playing flute.
Yeah?
That was the minig in those days. Wow. I mean, the Gemara is a little bit before that, but
no, they doing in like for the shiva, and they doing the shuls.
Yeah,
I've seen few of them. They bring someone sings and they bring them.
Well, officially, he brings on the Banu. Ramban says the sound of what was the purpose of the flutes.
The sound of flute is sad.
And he said it would evoke weeping.
Oh,
the flutes would make people cry. Oh. It was a big thing in those days to cry at a funeral, and the women. They're howling and there's, you know, got somebody doing it. That causes the people to cry.
But that's not a Chabad custom to no. make a big deal out of the...
In the
Persian, they do even nowadays, they make a big deal of the Avelut. But Chabad is not...
Didn't they used to pay somebody to make people cry?
Yeah, that's what the lamenting woman is. That's Mekainenis. They hired women... They knew how to cry and make other people
even
cry.
Even nowadays, they do in Iran. Nowadays, they pay people, they come.
I'm telling you, that's what it says. So the Yehuda holds, no matter how poor the husband is, he still is obligated to, we force, Bezdin forces him to pay for two flutes and this crying woman. Wow. The lamenting woman. Yeah. Bechlal, it's a whole different, in the, even in the Litvisha world, or even the Hasidish world, they have eulogies, and that's paid them, and the Levias could take who knows how long. And our so-called B'davke, the Rebbe was adamant that we don't do any eulogies at all.
What is the reason?
First of all, they say, you know, they say, that if the dead body would hear what they're talking about him, he would say, do me a favor, shut up and like, bury, put me in the ground already, you know? But I don't know if this is the reason, but it says in Halacha very, and this again, people don't realize, you know, they mean well, and they end up, based on Torah, doing more harm than good. It says when you make a eulogy about a dead person, and you exaggerate about the person, it's actually detrimental to the neshama upstairs. It hurts the neshama. Why? No, because the neshama comes upstairs for judgment. And Hashem says, 1 minute, you're so bad, you fooled people that you're better than what you really were? No, Hashem says, here's Emes. I think it's Elam Emes, right? Hashem says, you're coming up, and down there, people are speaking about you, who knows what, so you fooled, it's another addition on the hit list. So therefore, I don't know if that's the reason, but that's a very strong reason why in our circles, no eulogies whatsoever. Because it could mamash be detrimental. I was by levayas of people, and people were getting up and speaking about that. You think they'd be Moshe Rabbeinu? No, I'm saying the way they spoke about these people, do you think they're mamash Moshe Rabbeinu?
Like Persian or American?
No, whatever, both. Both. The Persian, I don't understand what they're saying. I'm saying American, I don't understand what they're saying. But when I get instant translation, you know, instant translation. But no, you hear sometimes. I remember as a Levi, I said to myself, "Oh my God, the person wasn't even so religious, and they made a mamish sound like Moshe Rabbeinu." You know, I mean, what are you doing?
any funeral I've been to, the guy's always great. They never see anything bad about a guy.
Of course, you only see good.
You never see anything bad about him.
You know, in the order of the parshas in Vayikra, it says Achrimes, Kadeshim, Emer. Right? That's the order of the Tav Shemini, Tavriya Metzera, Achrimes, Kadeshim, Emer, Bahar Bechukesi, right? So the Velt says, Achrimes, after somebody dies. Kadeshim Emer. They say how holy he was.
Wow.
Kadeshim Emer, that's a, Emer, Amira. That's when they say how holy he was. Okay, but no, that's good, because if you speak bad about somebody who's up there, you know, Bezdin takes anything. But it says it warns very much. You have to be extremely careful not to. If you do speak about the person, you can't exaggerate on the person, because it's partially detrimental. You're not doing the person a favor. You're hurting the person by saying a eulogy that's not true.
But Hashem knows what's going on. He knows who the person is, you know?
I assume so.
So at least people can talk good about it, but Hashem knows the person.
So that could be the reason why we don't. But in our circles, I mean, even the Rebbe, nothing. Nothing.
And if a person is alive and they post about him, we learned last week that this is very bad
too. It's also not good. Okay, so the Mishnah said what the father gets and what the husband gets, right? Okay, so now the Gemara says, "Bekesem minolon." How do we know? Okay, it says that beating nasati l'ishazeh. The pasuk says, "I gave my daughter to this guy." So we see a father can give away his daughter, but how do we know he gets the money? Maybe the girl gets the money. How do we know? It says, "Bekesem." Minolan, where do we learn that the father gets the money for the kedushin? Amar Rav Yehuda says like this. Amar Ka, the pasuk says, when a girl, after she's a girl that was Ami Yivriya, she was sold as a Yiddish slave, right? So it says, either when she becomes a gdela, when she becomes an adult, she goes out free. Even if it's before the 6 years. So over there it says like this, V'yotzer chinam ein kosef. Okay? As soon as she develops the sign of an adult, it says V'yotzer chinam, she goes out free, ein kosef. You don't have to pay the master money. In other words, like this, normally a girl is a slave for 6 years. So let's say she was sold at 5 years old, right? She would be a slave until she's 11. Okay, so when the master buys the slave, he's buying it for 6 years. What happens if a girl is sold at 10, and this, when she hits 12, you know, she goes out free? So you might think you have to pay the master money because she's going out early. So the pasuk says no. V'yatzeh chinam ein kosef. The master gets no money.
Do you know that when she gets mature, then
they
go free?
What's alluded to from the psukim?
The law?
Yeah. No, that's not law. So it says like this. V'yotzeh chinam ein kosef, right? This owner doesn't get money. Correct? Which means when she leaves this owner, she doesn't get money. But when she leaves a different owner, there is money to the master. When the father lets go?
Oh, by this one.
By Kedushin? Then the father... Ein kesev laden zeh. There's no money to the one that... The master who's letting the girl go free. V'yesh odin l'kesev acher. But now this girl's leaving the father's jurisdiction through Kedushin. Right? So then, obviously, he does get the money. Umanu, who's the master that would get the money? Avia, her father. So therefore we see clearly, who's the master? The father. So therefore when the father gives her up for Kedushin, he gets the money. Right? That's the proof what the Mishnah says, that the father gets the money. So the Gemara says, okay, the Eima Ledida, maybe she gets the money. All the Torah says, there's no money by the Maitzvah, but by Kedushin there is money. Right? That only teaches us there's money. How do we know the father gets the money? So the Gemara says, 1 minute. Hashtavim mekabel kedushel. If the father makes the kedushin, right, like it says, Nasati Lisha, who has the jurisdiction over the kedushin? Not the girl, the father. So she should take the money. The father controls the act of kedushin. So why should the girl get the money? That's illogical. So in other words, like this, from the pasuk we learn now that there's money.
Yeah.
That there's money. Who gets the money? That's a logic. If the father can make the kedushin, so for sure the father gets the money. But the Gemara says like this, no. Maybe that's only a girl under bas mitzvah. How about from 12 to 12 and a half? Maybe she does get the money. So it sounds like this. Ve'ema, the Gemara asks, Hani mili ktana. Maybe that's only a ktana, the less yelo yad. A minor cannot make legal legal acquisitions, buying and selling and all that. Avo night or the islo yad, but a girl when she is 12 can do actions and can acquire and can buy and sell. Maybe it belongs to her. It doesn't make more sense like this. The father controls the kid until 12. That's a given. Right? And I understand why the father gets the money, because the girl has no legal ability in money. She can't buy, she can't sell, she can't do anything. Okay? Halachically, by the way, if a 10-year-old kid has a phone and he sells it to his friend, halachically the transaction is completely illegal. Huh?
No,
I'll
plug myself.
I'll be the kid of the candy bar and he sells it to his friend. Technically, the father can stop the transaction. It's not a legal transaction. The kid's under bar mitzvah, so there's nothing. But a girl 12 to 12 and a half is an adult. She's obligated to mitzvahs. Right? If she has maturity, that's why she's bas mitzvah. So she could do transactions. So I think maybe that money by a night, she would get the kedushin. So the Gemara answers, Amakar, no, we learn that from a pasuk. It says, Binudeha Beis Aviha. It speaks by annulment of vows, right? So it says, "Ve'elah chukim close to the bottom of the pasuk." Hashitziv Hashem as Meisha ben Av Levit ben Oreha Beis Aviyah. So the Torah says, "What we learn out from here? Kol shvach neurim la'aviyah." When the pasuk says "ben Oreha Beis Aviyah," the Gemara learns to mean that whatever she makes as a naira goes to the father.
It's the same as
Ketanah. Same as Ketanah. So in other words, like the Mishnah says, she could do deals. Right? She could do transactions. Maisi Yada. But whatever she gets, Xeris Akasa belongs to the father.
And she loses in transactions.
It's her money.
Is there anything like this for boy too or no? Because girl at mitzvah is 12, but it's extended to 12 and a half. By boys also this such a thing?
No.
Only by girl.
Because by boys it's 13. First of all, the father doesn't have the control over a katan. Father can't marry off a katan. Only a katana.
Oh yeah? Not the boy?
And the Gemara learns out from a pasuk. As biti nasati lishazah.
Not the boy.
A father cannot do a kedush with a 10-year-old boy.
Wow.
The kid can't do it either. There's no kedush by a katan. Why? Because kedushin, don't tell this to the women, by kedushin, the man acquires the woman. He's doing an acquisition. Correct? Yeah?
A boy
that can't do acquisitions.
That's the old days.
Even within kids, even the ketanim, there's a halachic difference at what age the cotton is. It says like this. A real little kid that doesn't know the difference between a stone and a nut He's too young to understand there's a difference between a stone and a nut. A nut you eat and a stone you throw away. Yeah? So if a kid's under that age, let's say it's 6 years old. That's it, right? So even if you give a kid something, the kid cannot acquire it. Even if you give it to him. But let's say at 6, they know the difference between Tzrard, Vizarki, Egez, and Neitli. So Egez will take and a stone will throw away. It means he's mature enough to know that. If you give him something, he acquires it. But a kid, that age, a 10-year-old kid, if I give him something, if I give a 10-year-old kid a present, this Gemara. Yeah? Come here, I'm giving you a present. And the kid picks it up, then he acquires it. But if a kid found the Gemara in the street, let's say, you know, Mitzia, Hefker, and he picked it up, he doesn't acquire it. Why? What's the difference? This he could acquire, this, okay? So the Rishonim explains a very interesting concept. We'll talk a few minutes on this. The Rishonim explain, it's a lot of, in the Rishonim Achrei, I remember from my yeshiva years, Kenyan, you need das. You need a level of maturity to acquire something. If I sell you something, or I give you something, okay, I need my das and your das. You need das to make a Kenyan. Picking up something from free-for-all, from Hefker, you're doing it all by yourself. Right? That takes a lot of maturity that a cotton doesn't have. But if I give a 10-year-old a kid something, so I have das, and my das giving helps him to acquire. But on his own, he's lacking das to be able to acquire it on his own. To acquire something, you need das, maturity. That's Bar and Bas Mitzvah. Okay? So Katan, he cannot do Kedushin for himself. His father can't even do Kedushin for himself. It's exerus that caused by the daughter that says a beating of Sati Lishazah. The Torah says, I gave my daughter, means he's allowed to give his daughter. So over there, until 12 and a half, the father can give the daughter, but and he keeps the money also. In other words, the Torah says, because Binara Beis Aviha, the Torah differentiates by a girl between Naira, that she's still Beis Aviha, and a Begeris, which is completely out of it, 12 and a half. Has nothing to do with halachic responsibilities. A girl, 12-year-old, is bas mitzvah, she's obligated to all mitzvahs, everything, you know, that she has to keep, everything from A to Z. But control over her, in monetary issues, the Torah says, Binura Beisavia, the father has control over her. He can marry her off, he can, whatever. A katan, the father doesn't have that control over him. And his own seichel doesn't have. So a kid cannot do kedushin. So technically, if a 10-year-old boy comes over to a 10-year-old girl, or a 12-year-old girl, or a 15-year-old girl, yeah? And he gives her, well, in front of two witnesses.
Just get a gift?
No.
Instead of mukadeshously, whatever, you know? No good. No good?
A 10-year-old boy.
10-year-old boy.
But someone older.
By the way, if a 15-year-old boy did this to a 10-year-old girl, it's also no good.
Or 10 also not good?
Only the father could do the kedushin. Oh, yeah. She's a ketana. Oh, right?
If it's 12 and a half, it's okay.
Yep. Not okay. You shall need it yet. Then it's really not okay.
This one,
huh?
This piece.
Huh?
This piece, it looks like it's good.
Yeah, this is much, much more practical than the Gemara we learned before about Mitzvah Shemira.
like you said, this is a Shas Katan, right? You said Ketubot is...
Yeah, Ksuba says the whole Shas in it. Okay.